I like to start with a story. It kind of relaxes my nerves, and I've learned in public speaking that if I don't get your attention in the first 10 seconds, I lose you for the rest of the time. I don't think you all are that group of people, but just in case. So the story is of a young boy who went out on a nice day like today for a swim. He was a fairly good swimmer. And as he was swimming along, he lost track of how far he had gotten away from the shoreline. And when he looked back, he realized, maybe I should head back in. But if you're a swimmer, which I'm not, you know sometimes you can get just a little beyond your ability. And the current began to pull him. The harder he tried to come back in, the more the current pulled him out. And so he began to get pretty worried, especially when he took his first gulp of water. And then he began to panic. And all of the principles that he learned of swimming were lost. And he began to frail around. Well, there were people who had been on the shoreline who had seen him, but had paid not much attention to him. And even when he began to flail around, there was still some hesitation. Still that question mark of, is this just the kid playing around, or is this really a situation? There was one man who did not wait to see if there was an issue. He saw enough, and he jumped into the water, and he swam out to rescue the young man. When he got to the young man, he said, I am here to save you. Grab a hold of me, and I will get you back into the shoreline. The young man could only think of surviving. He wasn't really processing what his rescuer was telling him. And so when he grabbed the rescuer, he pushed him down into the water because he wanted to live. He was trying not to drown. And by pushing the rescuer down into the water, that gave him one more breath. The rescuer fought his way back up and said to the young man again, I am here to help you. You have to trust me. Let me save you. Put your arms around me. I will get us back into the shoreline. The young man again grabbed the rescuer's arms. So the rescuer could not swim. And down they went. At this point, the rescuer fought his way back up and began to have his first thought. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea. Maybe this is too much for me. Maybe I will not be able to save this young man. Maybe I will not even be able to save myself. But he doubled down. And he refused to give up. And he took everything that was left in him. And he said, young man, grab a hold of me and I will get you back in. But instead of waiting for the young man to grab him, he grabbed onto the young man and with one arm, he fought his way back into the shoreline. And when he got to the shoreline, he was exhausted. He had nothing left. My name is Emmanuel Warren. And I am here today because someone thought that I might have something to share. I might know something about adoption. I'm from Culpeper, Virginia. I'm here with my son, Yuri. He's one of 12 children that me and my wife, Corey, have been raising for a long time. We've been married for 28 years. Our adoption journey started 20 years ago. We attend Oak Grove Mennonite Church. Our bishop there is Lamar Holstetler. We've been very blessed to be with this body. When I was asked as to what to share about on a journey of 20 years, there's so many parts that I could not share, that I wasn't comfortable with sharing. I just didn't know if I could get through it. And then there were some parts I thought, I'm not sure how much you can relate to, how much you can relate to. So my subject this morning, as you've seen, is entitled The Invisible Battle, Thriving Versus Surviving, The Trauma of Adoption. And that is where my family is at right now. Our age range of children is 10, the youngest. The oldest is 33. If you're doing the math, and just in case, I look younger than I am. I'm not supposed to laugh at that. I'm 50.
Now, you do look younger than you are.
I'm 50, and if my oldest is 33, maybe in this crowd, you would assume that must be the first adopted child. But typically, I get people thinking other things. But yes, my 33-year-old is my first adopted child. She was 13 when she came to us in 2006. My oldest biological son is now 25, soon to be 26. There was a lot of things that we have not understood, and I'll get into that, but the reason this title resonates with me is because there is great trauma in adoption, and typically when we think of that, we think of the children, and that is very real. But my calling this weekend is really to you all, the parents. Because oftentimes when we come to adoption conferences, the emphasis is on the children and how we're trying to meet their needs, and that is important. But oftentimes we kind of get left in the invisibility of the work that we are doing. And what I want to hopefully leave with you is some hope that will help you learn or better assess how to thrive versus surviving. Are you surviving or are you just thriving? And does it matter? Adoption and fostering often begins with a child in crisis, but they also place a family on a journey marked by loss, grief, uncertainty, and sacrifice. The challenges at times can be overwhelming. And we find ourselves pouring out far more than we ever imagined while seeing less trickle out. But in the midst of all these hardships lies a critical difference between surviving and thriving. My desire is to acknowledge the visible and the invisible aspects of the trauma that families like ours carry, while offering some encouragement to not just endure the journey, but to flourish within it, even as the trauma presses on. Let's pray. Father, this morning, I want to give this time over to you. I am here for your glory. Please be with each of us, your sons and your daughters, to help us hear your voice, to be blessed by your presence, and to come away from this place with great encouragement to continue to do your work. In your name I pray, amen. So what is trauma? This is not a rhetorical question, this is directed to you. And I heard you interact with the first speaker, so I'm expecting some interaction. What is trauma?
Situations
beyond your control. Okay, thank you. One more.
It's not just a situation. It's a situation that often leaves you feeling helpless. It's scary, frightening.
Okay. So trauma can be a situation that creates certain emotions, like fear.
Fear, yeah.
Go through an experience.
Yeah. So I'm going to take all three of what you said, because all of that is true. And for us to be on the same page, I want us to have the same definition so we're speaking the same language. How about this? Trauma is a lasting impact, the branding, that distressful experiences have on a person's ability to trust, connect, regulate emotions, feel safe, and understand the world around them. What is this?
Blank sheet of paper.
Blank sheet of paper. And which shape is it in? Usable, not usable?
Usable.
Okay. What have I just done? Crushed it. Traumatized it. What's the shape of the paper now? Less than it was before. What can you see? Something's happened to it, unmistakably. Semi-usable. This is the shape that many of the children that we have in our homes comes to us, but it's also the shape they leave us in when they come into our homes. The child is not the only one who gets traumatized. We also face our own traumas. Even after the experience of the trauma has passed, the results still remain with us. Now, I want to give one more example to help you feel this. You just saw it. Now I need you to feel this, because sometimes when a person is speaking, and I'm speaking for myself when I'm sitting in your chair, if I don't feel it, it doesn't resonate with me. So I want you to feel it. Take your hands. And I want you to clap as loud and as hard as you can on the count of three. You ready? One, two, three. That was good. One more time. One, two, three. That was really good. One more time. One, two, three. How does your hand feel?
Let's not do it again.
That's what trauma feels like. It's an event that impacts you and it leaves something behind. And you don't want it to happen again. Trauma creates exhaustion. And have you ever felt exhausted? Trauma creates isolation. Trauma creates discouragement. One of the ways that we've experienced exhaustion is just in the world of media. We don't have the radio, we don't have the TV, we don't even have, or we didn't have smartphones in our home, except for mine and my wife's, until we moved into the area of having adult children at home. And that's a whole nother subject. But prior to that, we didn't have media accessible in our home. Yet somehow our children were still being influenced by things that would only come from the society's media access points. How is that possible? That is an exhausting thing to try to figure out. Isolation. As I had mentioned, very truthfully, that we appreciate the body of believers that are in our congregation. But so many Sundays and Wednesdays and Sunday evenings, we have felt like we are the only ones who understand what we're going through. And it's not that people don't see us, it's that they don't understand. It's not even that they don't want to understand, they can't understand.
Right.
It's just the difference when you're sitting in a room amongst people with the same battle scars and you just look at each other. You don't have to say a word. Just me too. And trauma creates discouragement, because sometimes you are at your wit's end, you've done everything you know to do, and the trauma is still lingering. What do you do? What are you hoping? What do you pray after you prayed so many times? Now that we understand trauma, I want to move into another part of the title, that deals with survival and thriving. And so for this one, I need two volunteers, two brave volunteers. They're in great shape. Now, I can't wait too long. I'm on a timeline so I can pick people. That could be worse. Okay, come on up. All right, if you can stand here and you can stand here, what's your name, sir?
Jeremiah.
Jeremiah, nice to meet you. And you?
Derek.
Derek sounds like my candidate for survival. All right, very simple instructions. All I want you to do is to breathe and relax. Okay, just breathe and relax. And I'll tell you when to start. Derek?
Yeah.
All right, I'm terrible with names. But Derek, for the purposes of this exercise, and it's just an exercise, I promise I won't put you in harm's way, but I need you. Are you a swimmer?
Yeah.
Okay. I need you to hold your breath for 60 seconds. Problem?
Maybe.
Okay.
No promises.
Now, what I want you to do, I'm going to step away. I want you both to face each other. Stay where you are, but just face each other. All right? And I'm going to tell you when to start. Anyone have a timer?
Sure.
Okay. Call it out when we get to 60 seconds. Tim, when to start.
Okay, start.
Go. Now, as they're doing this exercise, I'm going to talk through it just a little bit. We understand what's happening because you heard the instructions. You know what's happening here, and you are going to see what's happening here. Well, many times people who we go to church with, who we go to school with, that we interact with, they don't know what's going on. And all they see is this and this, and it looks the same. But I'm going to show you a difference here in just a minute. This is the invisible aspects of the life we live. Don't pass out.
Time's up.
All right, breathe. Yes. All right, so here, I have one question for both of you, and don't overthink it. How does you feel?
Relaxed.
Okay. Now, you were looking at your brother here. Did he look the same?
I would say so.
Okay. The entire time?
Yeah.
Okay. How do you feel, Derek?
A little tired.
A little tired? Okay. What were you thinking while you were relaxed? Okay.
Relaxed.
Nothing specific. Relaxed. Hold on to that. What were you thinking?
When 60 seconds is up.
Why?
Because I was wanting to breathe again.
Breathe. Have a seat. Thank you. So here's what you just witnessed. Two men in very similar circumstances. Everything seemed pretty much the same except for one. The one could not breathe and the other could. And the difference between surviving and thriving is what you just saw. When you are switched into the mode of surviving, all you can think about is breathing, your next breath. But when you're thriving, you can think about what you're made for. You can think about what God's purpose is for your life. You can think about anything. But when you are just surviving, it all comes narrowly in to just making it to the next moment. Which one do you think God wants for his people? Thriving or surviving?
Thriving.
And as parents, what do our children need? Survivors or thriving parents?
Thriving.
So we need to learn how to be thriving parents, not just survivors. Now, If you have your Bibles, and if you don't, it's okay. Most of you all probably know this verse by heart. But James 1:27 is actually one of the verses that I think is on the pamphlet for this weekend. It might stay there, might be there all the time. It's a very fitting verse, but it's also a curious verse. James 1:27 says, "Religion that God our Father accepts as pure and faultless is this, to look after orphans and widows in their distress." Now, there's another piece of that which acts as a great segment to keep ourselves from being polluted by the world. But I want to focus in and emphasize to look after orphans and widows in their distress. More specifically, families that adopt or foster enter into the distress of the child and themselves experience the trauma from that struggle to rescue. If you remember in the earlier story, the rescuer, when he went in to save the young man who was in distress, what happened to him? He entered into the distress of the young man, and he himself became distressed. And when you look at that verse, how many times have you heard it but never realized that when you enter into the distress of the widow and the orphan, it causes you to be distressed? You cannot save a person and put yourself in harm's way. That's the very nature of rescuing. I've been a police officer for 17 years. And one of the teaching points in the academy is that you have to wait until the bad guy presents danger before you can respond. We can't be so quick to respond to what we think until we first really understand what's going on. That usually means that something has happened, trauma has happened to our families, in order for us to realize, oh, that's an issue. When we brought our first group of children home, they would have been 5 months old, two twins, our brother who was four. And even though we knew there was probably some challenges because they came from a hard place, it wasn't until things really started to pop off, things began to happen, that we started to understand, oh, we have this issue, oh, we have that issue. But trauma had already happened that triggered us understanding we need to change things up, we need to do something different. So we see children in need, and there's a lot that can be said to those needs. But this weekend, my focus, again, is to direct my time to the invisible aspects of our experience as parents, because we're the ones who jumped into the deep waters. And sometimes we didn't realize that in doing so, we were into the distress of our children. But God has an intention for us to thrive in that as we are caring for our children. There's probably at least three groups that most of you fall into here. The first group are those who are considering fostering to adopt. There's a second group who are in it, and you need help. You need encouragement. You need support. You need something to hold on to. And then there is probably a smaller group, which my brother over here is in, where you've been there, done that, and you're here, hopefully, to provide support and encouragement for those of us who are in it. When we look at James 1:27, I wonder if you notice something that it doesn't say. When I read the verse, it talks about, you know, the distress of the widows and orphans, and that this is something that we're supposed to do. We're supposed to respond to that distress. How do we, this is a feedback time, how do we typically hear or think we are to respond?
Fix it.
Okay, how? How do we fix it?
Financial support,
okay. Yeah. When you read the verse, James 1:27, about Responding to the distress of the widow and orphan, how do we typically think about responding? Okay. Again, for the sake of time, and I appreciate your responses, that's all true, I'm going to give you the answer. And you can shake your head if you think this is true or not. When you read that verse, do you not hear adoption and fostering? Why are you doing what you're doing? Has that verse never surfaced, never come up in your conversations, never been a part of your reason for why you're doing what you're doing? Why do you think the verse is used in a conference like this? It doesn't say anything about adoption and fostering, but it's one of the verses that's used in our conference. Because somewhere in between the lines, we do register that part of helping the distressed child is fostering and adoption, and we know that is true. But the reason why I'm drawing this emphasis is because there are a lot more ways to respond to the distressed child. And that's important because there may be some of us who know, I am not cut out to adopt, I'm not cut out to foster. And then we step away. And we go as far away from that, thinking that there's not something for us to do. And that's the part where I will not let you off the hook if you're in that group. Regardless of where you find yourself at today, there are real tragedies that are happening all around us. And we know that God has created us to be a body. The speaker earlier mentioned about the different gifts. And so the question is not about, am I called to adopt or foster? The question is about, what am I called to do to respond to the distress? And as was mentioned, there are a multitude of ways, which I'll get to in a little bit. My family learned some things along the way that I wish we had known a lot earlier. I'm only going to share two with you because we needed a lot to learn, and so that would take more time than what we have. But the two areas I want to focus on for the next few minutes is, number one, responding rightly to the distressed child. How to respond rightly to the distressed child. And depending on what God has called you to do will determine what that looks like for you. Number two is, when responding to the distressed child, expecting to be distressed. A lot of families go into adoption with this idea and this picture that it's going to be beautiful and wonderful and a happy ending story. When I went to Ethiopia for one of my first adoptions, one of the first things that I was taken aback is, as I was sitting in the embassy, there were other people sitting with me that were there to do the same thing. But there were LGBT people. There were people from different religions. In other words, adoption and fostering, and I'm probably getting too much until tomorrow, but I'll just say this and move on. Adoption and fostering and reaching out to distressed, anybody can do that. So that's not the goal, right? That's a part of the journey. Okay, I'll couch that for tomorrow. But I want to unpack three ways of how we respond rightly to the distressed children. So one thing we learned is we need to respond rightly to the distressed children. And under that, here are the three ways. First, we need to count the cost. The question is not, will there be cost? The question is, are we willing to pay the cost? In Luke 14:28, Jesus says, suppose one of you wants to build a tower. Won't you first sit down and estimate the cost to see if you have enough money to complete it? Most of y'all look pretty happy. There's a few faces that are kind of frowning. So maybe some of you are thinking about or experiencing right now the cost. What will it cost your marriage? 2016, an event happened in our home that required me to separate myself from the rest of my family in the same house. But I've never been in the same room with my wife, bedroom, since 2016. Cost. That affects your marriage. What about your children? Whether you have biological and adoption, fostering, that mix, just the mix of children, there's a cost. And I've heard a couple of comments that I think were not intended to come across the way it has. But whether you have biological or adopted or fostering children, I personally don't think, because I've had all, that it requires more. It's just different. It's different. One's not better. I don't love one more. I don't fight for one more. It's just different. But when my children, who we had in our home, became impacted by the decisions me and my wife made, I started to see the cost to my children. My church relationships. Come into church and you want to present a certain image. And we do that, don't we? Who comes in showing what you really feel like? So we put on a mask. And people believe the mask. And if you've ever been one of those people that's a truth teller and someone comes to you and says, "Brother, how you doing today?" You drop your head. Oh man, let me tell you. And you look back up and the brother's gone. That affects relationships. Extended family. You know, you don't have to go very far to find the shortcomings of extended family. For me, it was my mom and my sister. I come from a family of four. So my sister was my only sibling. And my mother was really close to me. And she did not support it, she just did not understand. Early on, first 3 months, my mom comes to visit from North Carolina. We're living in Virginia. She tells my daughter, who is Ethiopian and actually has a lot of features that looks like mine. My wife is Native American and Jewish, so there are not physical features that resemble. She tells my daughter, "Your mom will never understand you because of the cultural difference, because of the skin difference. This is my mom. This is a woman of God for sure." Why would she have to say that? What was the purpose? Cost. That changed my relationship with my mom. Have you had these experiences? How has your family responded to what you're doing? How have people looked at you when you come to church and one kid has one shoe missing? And I think I heard one of the sisters yesterday frustrated with daughters coming in with holes in their dresses and all the work that goes into the craziness, the chaos that is our normal life. That other people look at and say, "What is going on with that family? Brother, you need to control your children better. Sister, you need to dress your children better." But they never ask why. They never come alongside you and really get in there with you. Finances. Maybe in foster parenting, I remember for us, it's a while ago, we got some type of supplement that was nowhere near the cost. And I can tell you for our adoptions, all five came out of our pocket. I won't give you the numbers. We just finished paying off some of those 20 years later. It costs financially, but there's also a cost just in the regular daily feeding. That means you have to work. It means you gotta have a good job. In my case, I retired in 2017 from policing, and I started a line of work that I never thought I'd do. And I don't mention it to people because I'm partially embarrassed by it. And I'm not going to tell you.
The suspense.
And I've been looking to get out from underneath this work for years. But let me tell you, even in that, there's been a cost. And that's one of the deeper struggles of trauma in our family, is how even the work has been touched by the challenges that children have, the trauma that they come with. Yet you still have to provide. I would stop here and just give you an opportunity, if you are comfortable, and you don't have to give a personal one, maybe you just know of one, or maybe you can just name one. Give me three types of costs that you expected when you began this journey. Give me one.
Misunderstandings,
okay. So you expected there are going to be some misunderstandings, okay. Another one.
Rejection.
You expected to be rejected, okay. A third one. What's that? The cost of providing, okay. So you expected to be rejected. You expected it was going to be a large cost in the provision. And what was the first one?
Misunderstanding.
Okay. Now, what are some costs you did not anticipate, you just did not see coming?
Those three.
Those three? Okay.
No, seriously, we walked into it very naive.
Okay. I'm sorry.
Hey, we
grew.
We
learned. Yes, that forces you to grow.
Can we expect them and be surprised by them all in the same?
Oh, yes. Because sometimes there's levels to that. So what I would like to say to that point is, in trying to respond rightly to distressed children, we cannot carry this weight alone. There are going to be things that we expect, but there are going to be those things that we don't expect, and it's all a heavy load. We cannot carry them alone. Proverbs 11:14 says, "Where there is no counsel, the people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, there is safety." What difference would it have made for you all had those things you encountered, had someone come alongside you and said, "Brother, consider these factors"?
None.
None of your decision, or none in how you handle the things you encountered?
They wouldn't have affected our decision to do the process of adoption.
Okay. To expect. Yes.
All right, we'll take care of that when it comes.
Okay. So undeterred, but you would have been aware this is what is coming. Yeah? What for yourself? If someone had said, "Brother, hey, you're clueless, let's clue you in."
Yeah. So our training, they did tell us all those things. But we just.
You didn't listen?
Well, we thought, okay, well.
Not you?
Optimistic.
Are you still optimistic?
We're coming back to that.
Yes. Trauma. Many foster and adoptive families have accepted one of the hardest assignments imaginable, a 24/7 nonstop ministry that's invisible to most of those who are around us. And many of us have turned our homes into trenches, where we fight battles that are oftentimes invisible even to one another, as spouses and parents to children and children to parents. We have to be intentional about seeking out help and sharing what we're going through, creating a ring of support, and connecting with other adoptive families. I'm gonna do something right now at this point, and it's up to you if you wanna take this, but this is my number. Now, maybe when you call me, you won't reach me. I'll call you back. But mostly what I can do is be the friend of Job. And that is, I can listen. I might not say much. Because we all know the story of Job, right? It's when their friends begin to open their mouth that actually things kind of went sideways.
Yeah.
Sometimes we just need a number and a person to let it all out. I'm the person. But you need more than me. You need a team. As we said earlier, we need a cadre. We need as many people around us as we can get. So don't leave this weekend and leave with less than three numbers. Some of you have been to this conference many times and you still come here and you don't know any connections. You still go back to your home in your isolated places and fight alone. Don't do that. That is not how you thrive. That's how you survive. Remember, we're talking about how you thrive, not how you survive. So one of the ways you thrive is by counting the cost. Understand, first, is this for me? Where has God plugged me in to do? I think of the story where Jesus says that he only does what he sees the Father doing. This was about a man who was in a sea of sick people. And imagine the scene. We don't think about it this way. There were mothers with sick children. There were children with limbs missing. There were men and women with leprosy and all sorts of sicknesses waiting to try to get to this pool of water to be healed. And Jesus' reputation had somewhat preceded him. So at some point, his presence there was known. Can you imagine what the mother felt like with the child who's dying? And here this person who has been known as the healer is here, and he passes you by. So his disciples are with him, and they say, Jesus, what is going on? What was so special about this man? And Jesus' response was, I only do what the Father tells me to do. If you are adopting, and listen carefully here, because this could come off the wrong way. And I looked at my notes in this, and I told myself, don't go on your notes. It won't come off right. Just go. Just talk through it. I hope this is better. So listen to me, especially for at least one brother who I've had this conversation with, and maybe more of you. If your reason for adopting and fostering, let me finish this thought before you judge me, is because you can't have children, or because you had a dream of having a large family and you see this as a way to do that, or you just want to do a good thing, don't do it. Because that child will not be able to bear the weight of your expectations. And when they fail you, you will want to displace them. You will emotionally detach, and you will not give them what they actually need. Now, here's the final thought. If you stay with me, hear me out. The reason you may not be able to have children, you may still want to have a large family, you may still want to do a good thing, but the reason that we do what we do, and this makes a difference between surviving and thriving, is what Jesus said. I only do what the Father tells me to do. So you may not be able to have children, but if God says adopt a foster, that's what you do. And that's the reason why you do it. So when that child does not meet your expectations or your hopes, you press forward because it doesn't change why you do what you do. Because it's not based on you. It's based on God. I hope you caught that. Again, the difference between thriving and surviving, sometimes it can be very subtle. All right. I mentioned we need to surround ourselves around people, other believers. 1 Corinthians 12:12 says, there is one body, but it has many parts. Okay? We need to surround ourselves around the parts of the body that help us do things that we can't do ourselves. All right, I'm running out of time, so I'm going to hit the next critical thing that we wish we knew, and that was we wished that we understood that when we went to get these children who were distressed, that we were going to be put into distress. We didn't fully gather that. We knew that they were coming with baggage. We knew there were going to be some difficulties, but the extent, the intensity, the foreverness of it, we were not prepared for that. As I mentioned, 20 years we've been in this, and there's no end in sight. I'm still processing that one. So we have to adjust our expectations. If someone had told me, hey, Emmanuel, this is going to be forever, I'm not sure. No, I am sure. I would not have done it. It would not. In my carnal mind, I would not have done it. There's no way. Forever? This doesn't get better? Well, you can argue that better can be different things, but those children, my adult children, the 3-year-old is still a part of my life. I still
maybe more in need of help than she was when she first came. What does that say about our parenting? I don't know, but it's still there. Isaiah 55, 8 through 9 says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are your ways my ways, declares the Lord." We have to have a shift in our perspective of what our expectations are, and it has to align more with God than what our own are, because we have these ideas about what the child should turn out to be or what success looks like. And God says, if that is your perspective, you will only survive, maybe, but you will definitely not thrive. You have to have God's definition of success for what you're doing. Sometimes in foster parenting, you only have a child for a minute. And that's hard when you know you need or you hope for more time and the child is gone. Adoptive families have to be aligned with God's plan to understand the challenges that are accompanying a distressed child in order to have adjusted expectations. The second way that we help these children in measuring our definition of success is found in 1 Samuel 16:7. Samuel says, "The Lord sees not as a man sees, but man looks at the outward appearance, but the Lord looks at the heart." What does that mean? That means a lot of times we're looking for the results of our parenting from the outside, when God is saying, "I'm working on the inside." You may never see the fruits of your work, but is that what you're doing the work for? To see the results, or are you doing it out of obedience, just because God says? Is it in James or Hebrew where it talks about the people of faith who never saw the fruition of their faith? Imagine that. That's tough. That's almost like being a little crazy. To do something without seeing any results is a little insane. And I would say that part of what we do is a little insane. The day in and day out, and you don't, sometimes it gets worse, but you still keep getting, I talked to a sister, I won't look in her direction. She said something yesterday, I thought I could not say anything. I was like, wow, I hope I get there someday. She said, "I wake up every day and I'm ready for more, I'm addicted." I said, "Wow, what kind of drug is that? Because I might need some of that." I hate getting up in the morning. And it's like, oh God. But you push through one foot in front of the other, and I pray starting off that day, God, only through you. Only through you. Here's my word, and this is not in my notes, but I feel like this just kind of fits in. And maybe you're not at that point. I hope that your experience has been a little different than mine, maybe a lot different. But my word that keeps me going is endurance. That's how we make it. It's not about our strength. It's not about our wisdom. It's not about even all the people around us per se. It's about enduring. It's that picture of the swimmer who says, even if I die fighting to get to the shoreline. Our life is not even important anymore. When we step into this arena, maybe it was, but at some point, actually surviving is not worrying about living. How you thrive is you become fearless even towards your own death. And I'm not talking about so much physical, I'm talking about to your dreams, to your hobbies, to the things that benefit you. I don't know when the last time I've done anything for myself other than, you know, personal hygiene. I have a 300-gallon aquarium that my customers come in to my visitor suite where we do our business at, that I'm not naming. And they look at that aquarium and they say, "Wow, what a nice, large, this is an aquarium, right? Where are your fish?" I don't have time for fish. When you're putting out fires all over the place, the only thing you use that water for is to put out the fires. I don't have any hobbies. I barely have friends. And it's not because I'm a non-social person, but I've gotten a reputation. It's because I don't have time. The cost. The final thing I will share with you in closing. 1 Corinthians 4:2 says, "It is required of stewards that they be found faithful." How does God measure our success? It's actually not in how our children turn out. He measures our success, grab this and hold on to it, by our continued faithfulness. not in the choices of the child, not in the outcome of our imperfect parenting. It's our refusal to not give up, to stay the course, even to look at our failures and say, it was never about me. I don't want to make that mistake again, but it was never about me. God, forgive me, help me do better, but I got to keep going. I got to stay the course. You're not responsible for the choices your child makes. You're responsible for jumping in the direction God tells you, doing what God has told you to do, and trusting the rest of God. So, to the families that are currently fostering or have adopted and feel tired, discouraged, disillusioned, traumatized, you are not alone. Look at this room of people around you. Your distress and the distress of the child is not a sign of failure. It's the reality of a fallen world that we live in. And we're called the people of God to step into that distress, to bring light into the darkness. And we do that not by our gifts and our abilities. We do it by the faithfulness and our commitment to God's calling. And if God has not called you to adopt, it's okay. You still have a huge role. Because we need you to hold the rope. And the story of the rescuer who went out to save the young man, think back to the moment where he was fighting to get back in and he didn't know if he was going to make it. What difference would that story have had if someone on the shoreline had thrown him a rope and pulled him in? I've had too many days where I didn't know if I was going to make it through that day. I didn't know if I could take another hit. There was nobody to call. And the only thing I could do is call out to God for help. And all I can tell you is that I'm here today. I don't even know how I made it through. I don't want another brother or sister to go through that. So if you haven't wrote down my number, write it down, because you might not be there today, but if you stay on this journey, you will encounter those moments where you feel like I'm sinking. And it's wonderful to have a God who's ever present, and he says he will never leave us nor forsake us, and I believe it, but I don't always feel it and experience it. So when God comes through a brother or sister who's tangible, who I can hear, who I can see, what a blessing. What a blessing. Thank you.